Welcome back, folks. This is the TKW podcast. That is the Knicks Wall podcast for first-time listeners. Mike Cortez here. Joining me today, Kyle Maggio, Sean Geddes, special guest. Speaking for the first time. He's usually on these calls, but now he's going to get to speak. Producer Dom, and we're all joined here to, I guess, celebrate's a better word for this, because I'm not really that sad. I'm more grateful. So the Knicks are eliminated from the postseason. They fell to the Atlanta Hawks in Game 5 at Madison Square Garden. Trae Young was great again. And the Knicks just didn't have enough to get it going. Kyle, I want to toss it to you first, since this was the first playoff experience for the TKW era. Obviously, it wasn't the ending we expected, but I think kind of where it was trending. So I just want to get your initial thoughts on Game 5 overall.
I mean, I thought they came out in the first half. I thought that was a good fight, was the way I looked at it. I really honestly looked at it as that was a tie game, except for those two bullshit fouls at the end of the half. Trae got three free throws. I think he or somebody else got two quick ones in the last minute. But Randle gave you a double-double in the first half, 5 of 11 from the field. He was getting to the free throw line too. So I felt like, aside from those first, he missed his first like three shots, and then he was like, pretty much settled in and good to go after that. A little sloppy, obviously, but I thought as a whole, that first half, he was like more than fine. I thought he was impactful. I did like seeing some RJ minutes with the bench units and the shooters, like we had discussed. I would have liked to see that unit more often and maybe extended minutes. Anything smaller, anything OB/Randle minutes, I would have liked to have seen. But, you know, again, it is what it is. I would have had quickly play a little bit more. But my big thing was second half, man. Randle was really rough. He had a really bad second half. Like, really, like, that was kind of the game there. And, you know, we've said this on the spot before, but they go as Randle's going to go. And if Randle struggles to go, the system that they've created is supposed to be simple by design. And if they're not getting those looks, it becomes problematic for them. So that was the issue they faced all series. And I addressed this on Twitter yesterday a little bit, but everybody's got to relax with the Julius takes. Okay. Like, I get it. He should definitely be held responsible as a top option for a playoff team. Of course, nobody's saying that. Nobody's saying not to call it the bad play, but everybody's rushing to, you know, we got to like recalculate everything about potential earnings and what somebody might get off one playoffs. Like, and end of the day, like, again, this team overachieved in a sense. Like, everybody took strides, the team included as a whole. Like, so our expectations for where they finished the season might not have been super reasonable either, for what to have, you know, like, everybody kind of knew this was a first, second round team. So this wasn't the fashion we wanted it to end. And obviously he needed to have played better. The Hawks played good defense on him. It wasn't something otherworldly. They sent a lot of doubles, a lot of help, threw a lot of looks at him, but you know, you just got to hope that he learns from it. I just think at some point, you know, we got to stop scrapping plans when they don't immediately go our way is my only thing. You know, again, hold them responsible. Like, that second half was awful. The turnovers were unbearable. Like, you're better. Like, some of them were like boneheaded too. Like, he threw one, I think it was like to Reggie. Reggie wasn't even looking at him, going baseline. It hit off of his shoulder, went out of bounds. Like, you know, you got to do better. You got to clean it up. So I have faith that he will, based off the work that we saw last season. But that was the main thing to me, is just how erratic he's been. Like, you know, even game 4, he started to put it together a little bit too. And then the game ended up getting lost. So just young team learning how to figure it out. Basically, it just looks like they weren't quite ready to win in the playoffs to me. It looks like they wanted it. Like, they even looked like themselves to me in the first half. Reggie was hitting threes, a bunch of threes. Like, Julius started hitting a little bit. Like, it just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. They didn't have enough guns, you know? They brought a knife to a gunfight, basically, is what I feel like. it just could have went better. I wanted six games at least, but you know, seeing Trey hit the shot on the logo, you know, to do the bow, like I didn't want this to end, you know, nobody wanted this to end at MSG for that exact reason. We knew it was coming. You know, he was going to throw, you know, the knife in the heart at the last minute. You knew it was coming. We all wanted to avoid this, but you know, this was our fate this year, man. We talked a lot of shit and this is how it ends for us. So, you know, we just got to take the L in stride. Fun season, but I mean, just a really rough way to go out.
Yeah, I think Solomon Hill trying to do something was my breaking point. Like, that just can't happen.
Yeah, yo, Solomon Hill.
Get a haircut, my guy. Like, get the fuck out the fucking court. Like, out of all the people I could have said did something, like, there's like 14 people in the Hawks. I would have been okay with getting that. And then I see this homeless-looking dude come over and trying to talk shit. Like, nah, like, that's like where my temper was just like, I can't take this right now. And then it kind of snowballed into that third quarter. But, Dom, I want to throw it to you. What stuck out to you in Game 5? Because, as Kyle mentioned, it was kind of just growing pains for a young team. But what stuck out to you?
I mean, for me, the glaringly obvious thing, and I brought this up to Kyle before we started recording, is like, why did we not see more quickly minutes in this series? You know, it's clear as day how impactful he could have been in this series. You know, he is the Knicks parallel to Trae Young. You know, obviously he's Trae Young light, you know, it's his rookie year, whatever, but he offers a lot of the same qualities that Trae Young can offer. And I just feel like he really should have been there. He really should have been playing 25 minutes a night throughout this series because, you know, Derrick Rose looked winded out there tonight. You know, like he's been going crazy for the last four games, this whole series, this whole stretch leading up to the playoffs. He's been playing 35 plus minutes a night. You know, he clearly just kind of ran out of gas, and that's why we didn't really see him in the fourth quarter. So for me, it was like, why wasn't Tibbs kind of giving us more quickly throughout the series? That was the main thing that stuck out to me, because you could tell throughout this game, Derrick Rose, how many points did Derrick Rose finish with tonight? He clearly didn't have it. 6 points.
Six on 3 of 11 shooting.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching the game with one of my good friends, and he was like betting on the game, and he was like, oh, is Derrick Rose going to put up over 24 or something like that? And I was like, yeah, probably. Yeah. He's been the only good Knick player this season. And sure enough, you see him come out and he's just wasted. You know, he just didn't have anything left in the tank. So that was the most glaringly obvious thing to me. But aside from that, yeah, I'm with Kyle. I would have loved to see more Randall and Obi minutes together. You know, I would have loved to see more Obi in general, just to try to spark something in transition, try to spark something, you know, just on the offensive end. You know, he can offer a lot that Taj and Noel can't offer. So I would have loved to see that.
Quickly had 11 points in 13 minutes, and they only played this man 13 minutes.
Again,
for the life of me, I don't understand why we have to have this conversation over and over again. And this series specifically showed us that they should have cut Elfrid Payton and just kept even Austin Rivers, because they needed shot creators. And not that I would, you know, maybe put Quickly in that. I mean, no, he's a shot creator. He's just not super adept with his dribbling yet, is my point. But the point is, he still makes offense, whether it's getting to the free throw line, getting into the paint, or shooting those jumpers, pulling up off the bounce, whatever. They needed that dynamic in this series. They didn't have somebody who was going to make them pay and scare them for 25 to 30 minutes a game. Him playing less than 20 minutes is criminal. Him playing not like anywhere close to that is like, that's what gets me angry. This isn't like at the beginning of the season when Tibbs was still playing Quickly sufficient minutes, even though we're like, all right, he's coming off the bench, but he's playing 25 a night. I won't lose my mind yet. Why we got to this point where Elfrid wasn't playing and Quickly played less is beyond me. I don't get how we got there. I just don't understand. Even Rose only played 27 minutes tonight. So it's not like Rose hogged all the minutes. It's just, it's perplexing to me why, you know what he can do. And in the press conferences, Tibbs specifically says Quickly needs to shoot the ball. We need him to be aggressive and shoot the ball. And then he doesn't allow him the minutes to do it. It I have no words for how that could happen.
It was one of the many mistakes he made. Sean, I want to get your immediate reaction to this, because last episode we spoke about Reggie Bullock not having a good game, and Reggie did have a good start to the game. And I really want to credit RJ Barrett there, because Capella swatted Reggie's first shot attempt pretty embarrassingly, and RJ made sure to get Reggie the ball immediately, and that kind of helped him get going. But after the first half, or really just the first quarter, Reggie hit four threes and then didn't really do anything. He didn't score again. And Trae Young scored 31 points, yet Thibodeau chose to make that his matchup. Like, he paired Bullock up with Trae Young. So, Sean, what the hell was Thibodeau thinking? Because clearly he didn't do anything, and the same problems that plagued them in game four kind of came back in this game, mostly because of the same exact reason.
You know, I don't know. I spent the whole year wondering what Tibbs was thinking on a few things, and especially in this playoff series. Shout out to Reggie, though, for coming out hitting shots. That was big. You know, it definitely helped set the tone a little bit. We still shot 30% in the first half for some reason, again. But, yeah, that was big. Also, yeah, shout out to RJ. I wish that we would have had the ball in RJ's hands more, especially seeing as Julius was struggling against the defense that was loading up against him. And RJ was seeming to get pretty good opportunities and used his strength on Bogey and things like that. And he was creating for others as well. He even, you know, set Julius up for a three. So I just feel like had we leaned into that more, it could have been more productive. But yeah, the fact that, like we just said, like Tom said, like Kyle said, like Mike said, like the fact that Mayo quickly played 13 minutes tonight is ridiculous. Like, and he's the guy that he was tonight is the, you know, 11 points in 13 minutes. We've known that he can do that since preseason. And maybe in preseason, you think, okay, it's just preseason though. Like, but he's shown on multiple occasions throughout the season, even against this team. He had the 16-point fourth quarter against the Hawks the first time we played them and brought us back to win a game. He dropped, you know, 31 against Portland and went toe-to-toe with Dame Lillard, who we just saw do otherworldly things last night. So it's just like, you know, had we leaned into that more throughout the season, had we wasted minutes playing Alfred Payton, Emmanuel quickly could have been, not only could he have been better this series, he could have been better this season, which would have led to him being better this series, which would have led to this offense being more potent than it could have been. Like, the fact that we had to wait until game three to get Alfred Payton out of the thing, like, it's just, that's all a major failure. There's a lot of successes the Tibbs had this year, so we can focus on those more. But yeah, I think that Emmanuel quickly may have been robbed even a rookie of the year run. I just think that he could have been so much more for this team. We could have leaned into, like, you know, he changes the game. He changes the floor for us. His energy level, he is not a defensive liability. Clearly, he was on Kevin Hurt. Like, part of what I thought, I was like, maybe they're playing 13 minutes because they don't want him to match up with one of the bigger wings on Atlanta. But when he's out there and he's guarding the Kevin Hurt is of the world, like, he's not really in trouble. You know, like, we didn't attack Trey, so clearly we can play small people on the court. And yeah, like you said, Mike, like, it's not like Reggie did a great job defensively this year. We were a top defense. Reggie was often guarding the number one wing player, but he wasn't often guarding the number one point guard. And times where he did, he kind of got cooked a little bit. Like, Trae Young was too quick for Reggie, you know? So it's not like you were putting Reggie out there and it's like, okay, he's the Trae Young stopper, you know? So it's like, if you need somebody, if I think Emmanuel quickly can get 18 put on him in the fourth quarter if you really need him to. Like, we could have, you know, so that part of it is confusing. It's disappointing, but I hope the next year, you know, Emmanuel quickly comes back even stronger again. I hope the next year IQ comes back even stronger, getting to the basket, you know, is able to add a few different things to his game. And hopefully Tibbs leans into him more instead of going away from him and being, I feel like the only person that can stop him in quickly is Tom Thibodeau. And he did a lot this year and consistently. And, you know, we should have, people wondered why we were mad about it months ago. And then you get to the playoffs and one of your best offensive options plays 13 minutes and in a game where you scored 89 points. And now you see why I was upset in December. Or January.
One of those months. It's really funny because Thibodeau kind of forgot sometimes your best defense could be a very good offense. Knicks couldn't score 100 points after they won game two. It's like he completely disregarded that you need to score points to win a basketball game. It's baffling. Obi Toppin, 10 minutes after putting together his best performance. You're not going to win games like that. He's not. Alec Burks, only 24 minutes despite shooting 50%. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more could have been done. You could have put RJ on Trae Young and then put more self creators on the floor if you needed to.
Basketball is not rocket science, bros.
It's really not.
I've been saying this for years. I get slandered for this. I get lumped in with points per game. I only care about scoring. I only care about points. All sorts of lies, slanderous lies. Basketball is about scoring points. I am not making this up. This is not something that I've created for my narrative. The most important thing you can do is be able to put the ball in the hoop as many ways as possible per player on the court. You need to play as many of those guys as possible all the time, but especially when you're down in a series and you need to catch up, especially in an elimination game. So you need to just play them. You need to play your best scorers and your playmakers and your shooters. They always need to be in the games in these situations. And most of the time, that's always going to be my take because that's how basketball works. So that's what I'm always going to advocate for. That's what I want to see. I want to see Burks getting 30 plus minutes of this one. I want to see Quickly getting 25, 30 minutes of this one. You do what you got to do, man. Like, I get it. Like, we ride some of these guys a lot, but like, Reggie Bullock didn't need 40 minutes, bro. And he was good tonight. Like, and he was like in the first half anyway, he was good. And it was like second half, everything's subject to change. We are in an elimination game. There should be no long leashes. Like, as soon as Reggie starts to fade and he's getting cooked and the threes aren't falling, that's it. It's time for a sub. Who better than Microwave Quickly on the bench, who comes in and just scores as quick, literally quickly as he can, gets the fouls, hits a couple threes, and boom, suddenly he's in double digits. That's the game breaker. Like, that's the dude. So he needs to be playing. It's very frustrating when I have to, like, plead for what is, like, basic basketball. Sometimes, like, you can't win without those guys on the floor. I need Tibbs to just meet. I just need to know. I need Tibbs to answer that question. I need him to make me feel stupid for wanting to have advocated for this all year. Like, prove to me why you doing it this way was better, because I just don't get why you wouldn't want all those weapons on the floor. I don't get it, especially when we're getting outshot every single game. I don't get it.
I really think, as much as shit as Randall's probably going to get the next couple days, I really do think Thibodeau had the worst series. And that's not to say he was bad the whole year. Obviously, he wasn't. But for this series, I'm pretty sure if we had to rack up the blame game, if we had to play the blame game, I think Thibodeau's ranking on top of my list for sure. No questions asked. Because everything that happened to Randall and RJ to a lesser extent, but mostly Randall, was just everything was just bad rotations around him. Where he kind of purposely shrunk the floor at times, almost playing defensive minded people, which made no sense.
I'm not trying to play the blame game, but if we were to play it, I would put my coin in the slot and pick Tom Thibodeau for sure. There's just too many things. Like, I mean, there was literally, and you can see it. So if you watch film, I know you have to see it. When Randall would catch the ball, Capella would immediately, and not even just regular help. He was crossing the midline. He didn't care. Yep. He was all the way, like, he is literally right. He's in the lane right now. Like, it's just like, okay, you have to at some point go five out. Where you have to put, you know, you have to go Randall Obi so that Capella can't do that. And I've said it a million times. Some people say, oh, but, you know, Randall on Capella or Obi on Capella. If the Atlanta Hawks wanted to win this series by dumping the ball to Clint Capella on the block, I would have taken my chances. That wasn't going to be what they did. That wasn't going to be the response. All you have to do with Capella is make sure you box him out. And it's not like Nerlens was really doing that anyway. No slight to Nerlens, but rebounding against larger bigs was never really his strong suit. So, and then there were plays where we didn't box Capella out tonight in an elimination game. I'm like, you are facing elimination and you're not making sure you box out the number one rebound in the NBA? Okay. We lost. And I think that in itself right there, not playing IQ enough. And, you know, right there, when you don't play IQ enough, and especially when we're shooting third, it's one thing if you don't play Emmanuel quickly enough and everybody's got it going. Reggie's killing. Allie Burks is killing. Derrick Rose is killing. Like, you know, everything is going extremely well. We're shooting 56% from the floor. We didn't shoot 56% from the floor at any point in this series, at any time. We were struggling to score the entire series. They said that the Hawks spent like 60 minutes. Like the Hawks had like an hour with the double digit lead in this series. And we had like 57 seconds or some crazy shit. We couldn't score. We played from behind in every single game. So that's a failure. That's a failure. So to not open the floor up by having an IQ out there, to not open the floor up by going 4 or 5 with having Obi on the floor, Randall, for Obi to be playing the best basketball he's played all year and have a great game he did last game and come out and play 10 minutes tonight and a night where we needed to open the floor up makes no sense to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting. Like I'm looking at the box score now for the first time. I haven't looked at any of the stats because, you know, I was just watching the game and feeling the misery settling in and not looking at the stats whatsoever. And I'm actually shocked, surprised that Julius Randle had 13 rebounds tonight, because like you were saying, I didn't feel like he was boxing out anybody tonight. You know, there were quite a few occasions where, you know, you're watching the play and it looks like, oh, okay, yeah, Julius has got that. And then bam, somebody's right behind him for the offensive rebound. And I'm just like, what is going on? What is happening right now? Like Sean was saying, it's an elimination game. And you're not boxing out the best rebounder in the NBA. And then you're not boxing out his backup either. So if that's the case, what exactly are we looking at right now? Like what is going on here? They should have gone small 3 games ago. You know, it was pretty damn obvious that they should have gone small 3 games ago, get Capella out of the game. You know, it's the only way that you have a chance, because like you said, Capella is shifting to the strong side every single time Randle picks up the ball. And yeah, it to me, yeah, blame game. If you're going to play the blame game, it's got to go to Tibbs. You know, we loved him all season, but it has to be Tibbs, because the strategy just was not on point for this series. It really wasn't.
Now, and just to add some levity to the series as a whole, if people are feeling down, just remember the Hawks. This is the Hawks going all in. They spent a lot of money this summer. The Knicks did not. They pretty much just ran it back a lottery team. So I think it's good to remember that as well. So this is a very promising start to hopefully what turns into a consistent playoff presence.
Yeah, I mean, we should be all right, guys. Like, we're really in pretty decent shape. It just didn't end how we wanted it to. Like, and again, it was always going to end in this round in 6 or 7 games, at least best case scenario to me, or we lose in the second round. There was no chance we would have a further Cinderella run. So in the context of basically ending where we expect it to end, just sort of not, you know, in uglier fashion, it's like, it is what it is. End of the day, most important thing to me, we got playoff reps, but to me, it was in a good way where RJ, for example, was really leaned on to need to step up. He didn't really do an excellent job. He was battling. You know, he had some up and down moments, you know, especially the last couple of games. He did a little bit of a better job, but not exactly the series you want from him. But again, that's fine because he's 20 years old. This is his first taste of playoff experience, and where he still had some pretty high level of responsibility doled onto him. So, like that, you know, before we even talk about the cap space and the picks and who we might be targeting and all that other shit, like that, this is why I always like to advocate for the playoffs, is because when you don't just like sneak in, if you actually make it, to me, that means something. Like RJ is going to go into his third year coming off of being the 4th seed in the NBA. And like, you know, he got his ass kicked against the Hawks, but like, that's still a good experience. Like you had to go out there. You had to take 15 shots a game. He wasn't just sitting out there taking 6-7 shots. Like you got to take a bunch of shots. Like, good luck. Figure it out, bro. Trial by fire. Like those reps are just really, really important early in somebody's career to be. So getting that for RJ and obviously the rest of these young guys, Obi in their first season quickly, you know, Mitch obviously couldn't be with the team, but at least your team is in it, having to be part of that experience. I just thought it was good for a lot of guys. I don't know. So just that standpoint alone made me pretty happy. Like just that, like this is better than, oh, just tank and play your young guys a lot to me. Like this is how you do a meaningful build now. So yeah, after that, like we're in good shape. We got the most money in the NBA. We're just over the cap floor. I put a tweet out the other day saying we're under the cap floor. My bad. We're just over with the Vildoza deal. But either way, we still have by far the most money in the NBA to spend. We have the second most picks in the next 5 years behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. If this front office is worth, you know, a damn, if they're smart and you're coming off the four seed and you have this much resources and good young talent, like, you figure this out, how to be somewhat sustainable. Like, this is, to me, is like, if you're a good front office, this is a pretty easy, we're going to have a somewhat, some kind of a playoff team easy for the next 4 or 5 years. Easy. Like, there shouldn't be any two ways about it, in my opinion. Like, all this talk about what Randall should be getting, I don't really care, because he's already making $20 million. He can make $25 million and it's not going to put a dent in it. He can make $30 million. It's not going to put a dent in it. I don't give a shit what Julius Randall makes. So even before we argue about that, like, to me, it's just additions now. Like, this is a good team. This is a good thing that you started with. Like, a lot of us didn't even think that this roster was going to work the right way coming into the year. But you figured out, like, RJ and Randall figured it out, right? Like, these funky pieces suddenly started to fit. So keep most of them. Keep the continuity going, right? Keep your little system going. But now, who else are you going to add? You have all this money. You have all these picks. You guys have heard me for years on this podcast complain and everyone yell at me about saying trade for this guy, trade for that guy. You got the picks now. You can't afford to play so many more young players. Like, Obi's going to need time next year. Quickly's going to need time next year. RJ obviously is never going to not start. He's going to need 35, 40 minutes a game. So what other young guys are you adding in here? Maybe a starting point guard, right? If you get lucky, Sharif Cooper, hopefully. But you know what I mean? It's like, aside from that, who else? There's not many. You got to start packing these picks. Get them out of here. You got to start trading these things, man. But before we start having to take, like, the Peyton Pritchards and shit like the Celtics got to do now. I don't want to go through this, man. No disrespect. Some of these guys are actually decent players, but you're not going to hit home runs on all these guys, and they immediately lose value. You got to just sell off. Sell off. I don't know who. I did the Dame jokes the other night. But in all seriousness, there's always a star who becomes available every year. Maybe it's Donovan Mitchell. Maybe it's somebody. But they got to get another offensive threat. But my whole point is, I'm not, like, disgruntled at anything or anybody on this team. Like, I'd bring Reggie back. I'd bring Rose back. You know, I would do what we got to do to take care of Randall. And then after that, like, you still have so much to work with. I'm just looking in abundance here. I feel like this fan base has always thought in such a scarcity mindset of, like, well, we can't pay Randall because he didn't perform like I wanted him to this year. So we got to not pay him. Pick up his option. I don't want to give him anything. And then we'll look to see who's available next year. Like, at some point, just pay the man. Clearly, he's not number one. And that's not his fault, all right? He's done what he could do to be the best player he could be right now. Just go get him some help. Get him a good perimeter threat. Keep RJ Barrett. Don't send him anywhere. Then let's see what happens next year. I don't know. You basically took the same team from last year, ran it back with Derrick Rose. That was the majority of it, right? So I'm willing to see what you do with some, like, real tweaks, some real adjustments now. Sorry for the rant, but I just feel like everybody always gets into this, like, this one guy wasn't good enough thing. And it's like, we just need to be adding now. We need to be in surplus mode. We have so much that could be coming to us.
One cool RJ stat. In 5 games, 15 assists, so just 2 turnovers. So he took care of the basketball. And I don't know if this sounds like a hot take, but he also looked considerably more comfortable, albeit way less responsibility than Randall. So I feel like that's an interesting storyline for me, at least heading into next season, is how close does RJ come to matching Randall in the totem pole? Because I think he's going to be a lot closer than we think, just off the jump that he made from rookie to sophomore, and now from 2 to 3, I wouldn't be surprised if
he's on the Jaylen Brown path, as I call it.
Right. Yeah.
He starts off and you're like, okay, rookie season. You're like, maybe a role player. Not bad. Low level starter, but not bad. Second season, I'm like, hold on. This guy can play. He could do a lot more things than I thought he could do. Okay. This is pretty good. I bet you next season is going to be about 20 points per game. This is when my 25-5 prediction is finally going to come to fruition, is going to be next year. And then after that, he's going to take it up one more level. So I think next year he starts to really start to cut into that gap a little bit, where you're just like, okay, he's the unquestioned number two on this team now, not the sometimes number two. Now he's definitely the number two. And then the following year is going to be when they're more 1A, 1B, if they keep it together. And if, you know, my predictions about the two of them continue to be true.
Yeah, I think, I mean, RJ, I feel like Drew Hamlin said they're going to work on off the dribble threes this summer, mainly. That's their main focus. And if RJ adds even only off the dribble three-pointers to his game this summer, it's going to be scary for the league. Like, it, even the one he took today where they went under the screen, he just pulled up. It was like, oh, my goodness, yes. Like, if that becomes a common thing for RJ to be able to pull up off the dribble, it's going to add so much to his game. It's going to make people have to play him differently, make it even easier for him to get to the basket. And I hope that we lean into giving him more responsibility. I'm a little disappointed in, you know, the fact that he didn't get more responsibility this year. But I also, you know, I thought about it yesterday and I was like, maybe that's just part of development. You know, I've never coached an NBA team. I've never, like, not giving a guy too much responsibility at once, letting him adjust to things as they go. Maybe if RJ has more responsibility this year, he doesn't shoot 40% from three. Like, you know, so maybe just there has to be stages to it. But I think that he should have gotten more post touches, especially against smaller guards. I feel like we should have looked at him in transition more, whether it's advancing the ball to him while he runs out ahead, or letting him be the guy that, like, when we get a rebound, we look to get it to RJ so he can push. And just, you know, allow him to get more of those opportunities, allow more of the offense to go through him, because he looked pretty poised in the regular season and even toward the end of the playoffs. Like, so yeah, I'm looking forward to that gap closing a little bit. And like Kyle said, I think next year is a 25-5 year. And I'm really looking forward to it. Maybe even like 27-5. But I think that RJ is really going to hit the boards. He's shown he can do that. He can do that at 20 years old. He can do it forever.
I totally agree on that with RJ. Like, for me, Mike mentioned earlier, he only had, what did you say, 15 assists and two turnovers?
Yep.
And one of those turnovers today was, I mean, his only turnover today was when he drove to the paint and tried to kick it to Noel. And I'm not sure what happened there, if it just bounced off Noel's brick hands, or if, you know, if there was an actual turnover in play there, you know, but it ended up in a turnover regardless. And for me, I'm like, yo, RJ can really be a secondary creator. He really can be. He really can create off the dribble, get to his spots, and find people off the dribble. You know, he really seriously offers that to a team. And I would like to see him have more opportunity to be able to do that. You know, I want to see more staggering. I want to see more RJ with that second unit. I want to see more RJ quickly OB minutes, because that really opens up a lot for the Knicks offensively, because teams aren't going to be game planning for that. You know what I mean? They're always going to game plan around Randall as long as he's the number one, the 1A, you know. But my next question is, if the Knicks go after Sharif Cooper, like we mentioned before, in the draft, how does that shift the responsibility amongst the three of them? You know what I mean? With RJ, with Randall, with Quickly. I mean, Quickly probably falls below that in the creator totem pole, but how does that shift what happens with the offense?
I think RJ is always going to be a main creator for this team. I just think he is. And you could see through these five games, he just seems to have a cooler head through chaos, which is very key if you're going to handle the ball a lot. So I could even see him being more of a ball handler than Randall if they were to bring someone like Sharif Cooper in. But I still think, like, if they bring in any guard, not just Cooper, any guard, they're going to be seeing minimal minutes, probably what Quickly saw this year. So I don't think we'll see any type of effect of that till maybe 2 years down the road.
Yep. But do want to get into our mailbag. This is our last post-game mailbag of the season. So appreciate you guys getting these in for us all throughout the year. It's been fun. Had some good ones. I hope Jimmy ended up going to the game. I hope we get an update at some point. Haven't heard back yet, but we'll kick off today's mailbag with Drew from TKW. He said, how concerned are you guys with that Tibbs is going to be this stubborn in the playoffs for the rest of his tenure? I mean, if history is any indicator, then we are to be pretty concerned.
That is why personnel matters the most. If you give him the best possible options, his stubbornness can't bite you as hard.
Yeah. So with that said, they better not bring back Elfrid Payton.
Yeah. If he comes back, I think I'm like, I think that's it. That's it.
I will fold the Knicks wall if Elfrid Payne comes back. I promise you. Listen. Not only would it be a war crime if they brought number six back, but after the unceremonious pantsing that was his benching in the second half of game two, to then not start game three or ever again, and not just not start, but never see another minute, sort of then vindicating us for saying he should never have been starting because you never really wanted to play him in the first place. So if Elfrid Payton is back, I want the Knicks tried for war crimes. I want Madison Square Garden in flames. I don't think that there would just be no way. I said that last year too, and that's why I was so angry coming back into the season. But there's really no way now. There just can't be. There's no way back.
That was literally our first podcast of the season. Elfrid got signed, and we were just so mad that we just got on here and just vented for an hour and a half.
Everyone's defense of it was the same defense the whole year. how bad could it be? That was the reaction. We already did this one year. You already know. It can't be that bad. And it was that bad. And it remained that bad. And we were forced to do that for an entire
season. And it was worse. It wasn't just that bad. It was worse.
It was worse, bro. He didn't even have his little Julius two-man game cooking because Julius just cut him the fuck out. I'm doing this myself now. I'm now the point guard, buddy. You have no purpose here. You can just run up and down the court now. You just run with me. I got this. Just absorbed his power or whatever. That assumes he has powers,
I was saying in post-game pouting, the last post-game pouting of the season, which was super sad, where I may or may not have cried. But I was saying that, it's unfortunate, this is on Tibbs a lot. And as far as being afraid of him being a stubborn, once again, like Mike said, it's about the personnel. So just please front office, get the right personnel and make sure none of the wrong personnel is here. But from there, it's also, progress is a process. The same way that Julius had to adjust to his first playoff series, his first playoff series for this team, the players, they'll come together. I feel like Tibbs will improve as well. And I feel like the front office will probably hold him accountable for certain things. Moving forward, they made, I doubt it's going to be the same mistakes every single year, So I think as this team grows, Tibbs will also grow with it into the role. And, he's great at what he's great at, and hopefully just, sharpens what he's not.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see. I would like to believe that some things would change. I think if you simply, like Mike said, just give him the right personnel where it's just a bunch of guys who can score some stuff, you'll probably be in pretty good shape. That's just my two cents. It's not like I'm right a lot or anything. It doesn't really matter. But RJ Carbone gave us what even is the meaning of life? It's an excellent question. Tonight it stinks, my friend. I think we're all a little bit bummed out, but it's a good question. I think it's a question that most of us think about often, semi-often. I think it's important. You have to do the existential stuff once in a while, but I got nothing for you, man.
Life's good, man. This is the best position this team's been in years, and tonight does suck, like Kyle said, but you got to have a breakdown once a month to stay sane. And if this is your day, this is your day.
My thoughts exactly. I responded to this tweet and I responded to this man and said, that is the real question. Life's good right now. Obviously, we're all a little upset. Probably more than a little upset that the season ended this way, but yo, man, I'm 24 years old. The last time the Knicks were in the playoffs, I was a teenager. And, man, I'm more excited about the Knicks than I ever have been in my life, I'm cool. I'm good. Life is cool.
Yeah, man, this is a dark moment. It's unfortunate. Nobody likes losing. But like Kyle said earlier, we were going to lose. This season was going to end on a loss. We weren't going to win a championship. It's unfortunate to go out this way. It sucks. It hurts in the moment. It's going to hurt really badly in the morning. People probably listen to this in the morning. But, yeah, waking up the morning after your season ends in the playoffs fucking sucks. I forgot, but I'm bracing for it. But, it's we're in great position, like Mike just said. we're in great position as a franchise. It's funny because I was saying that to people before we were even good. I was like, you know, we're set up pretty well. Like, we have picks, we have assets, we have cap space, flexibility. So, like, now we have all of that stuff and we're coming off of a playoff run. So, we just, you know, we moved the rebuild forward and we just got to keep moving forward with it, man. So, you know, be excited for the draft, be excited for free agency. Hopefully we're able to make something shake. I feel like at this point, we all trust in the front office. They've given us no reason not to. I mean, look what we got. Alec Burks is here. Known as Noel. They spent like $11 million combined on him for 1 year. They made a great trade for Rose, probably the trade of the season. They've just made great moves. They've put together a pretty good team. So I trust them with all this flexibility they have moving forward to make some things shake. And now we've changed the perception of the Knicks, like, around the league. Even I saw Bleacher Report, you know, normally they're taking any chance they can to clown us. But, you know, even though we lost in five and it was pretty bad, they were like, you know, shout out to the Knicks. Great season. Posted a couple of pictures of us. Like, the perception is just different now. So now you just keep improving and keep building on that. This is only year one. It's only the beginning. Only up from here. So life is good. Life is amazing. It is what it could be.
We've definitely had worse years. Most of the time. You're listening to this podcast. Game 82 just finished. The Knicks have lost something like their 52nd, 54th loss of the season. We're all upset about something different. It could be about the game, the season, or about maybe we even won the game. And now we've ruined our lottery odds. So things could definitely be worse. We could wake up tomorrow and we could be spinning tankathon. But that's not where things are at anymore. So, in our state of things, it has been certainly worse. We're doing okay now. But on that same note, we got another submission here from Freeman McNeil at Art Reno 3. Great season, lots of fun. But now the work begins for the front office. Need a shooter/scorer. Need a reliable, sturdy, wide body. Need Tibbs to learn from what doesn't work and make adjustments. Proud, though. Let's go Knicks. Pretty much the same sentiment, man. That's been the whole theme of this pod. Bummed how things ended, but they need another gun. They need a legitimate gun, whether that's a very good point guard, whether that's a scorer, like a Levine, a somebody like that. They need somebody. They need something like that. That's how they get to the next level. Whoever they're going to find to try to work with, I mean, that's, like you said, that's the work part of it now, but that's definitely it. But most of us are proud for the same reason Sean just said. You know, we're back on the map a little bit. Things are looking good. Can't really complain too much. So, you know, we'll got to see what happens. Big off season now. Big off season now. You know very clearly what direction you got to go in. That was the easiest thing about getting smoked like this in the playoffs was it makes you immediately realize what you need. You look at this and you go, wow, bro, we can't keep up with the Hawks. The Hawks, sure, they got Trey, but we can't keep up with DeAndre Hunter. We can't keep up with, you know, Kevin Herter. We can't see. All right, let's go shopping. Like, who's out there? Like, that's how I look at it. Like, it shouldn't be that difficult. They just got to figure it out. If they're a good front office, they will. So, I mean, we've mostly had that same sentiment, but because the next point somebody brings up here, at DJ Nalaba. We need to contact whoever runs that shit show in Cleveland and fleece them for Sexton. I mean, you have the right idea. I don't know. Like, we need whoever's going to score basketballs at this point. I am open to everything. Every option's on the table. I'll hear out every single argument you guys can bring up. So anybody who's good at scoring the basketball, who's a playmaker, a shot creator of some degree is on the table for me. I think, though, would you try to get Sexton or would you try to get Garland? I don't think they're going to split up with either one of them, but I know that everybody usually likes one more than the other pretty significantly.
I'll go Garland, but no way in hell. Cleveland's that stupid.
There's no shot.
Nah. The Clippers just lost at home to the Dallas Mavericks.
Heat it up.
Really? Oh, my God.
Kawhi's coming to the Knicks. You heard it here first, folks.
You heard it here first.
One.
Wait, first round really? Exit. Holy shit. Coming to New York.
One more win.
I am starting the propaganda. I really, what? Let the Clippers lose in the first round and Kawhi be looking for a new home. And let the Blazers also lose in the first round and be like, oh, wait. You know, sign Kawhi, trade for Dame. Whoa.
I'm sorry. Relax.
I just want to. It's. I gotta make up for, you know, taking so long to get to off season mode. So.
it's true. We are a little bit rusty. You did go straight to Galaxy Brand mode. We are
a little rusty. I love it. I absolutely love
it. We'll be back.
The next submission that we had here was from at Couch Bro Trent. This is the best season I've gotten to watch as a Knicks fan yet. Only been a fan since 2016. Sorry. All right, everybody's got their own story, man. All right, I don't know what yours was. But can't wait to see what the young guys bring next season. Hopefully we can add some shooters with the cap space. Sad to see them like this, but hopeful for the future. 100%, man. Same thing we keep saying. You know, just it's good to see that a lot of us feel the same way is the point. I think there's a couple of people who are being a little extreme about things, as there always is. But for the most part, everyone's just like, eh. Well, that sucked, but, you know, this season brought us tremendous joy. It was nice to turn on the TV every night, and you knew the Knicks had a chance to win the basketball game and that they were winning the basketball game more often than not. That doesn't really happen around here. My ongoing bit for, like, since they made the playoffs last was, wow, bro, I even missed the days of 2013-14 when I had to watch the Andrea Bargnani Knicks, because at least they won 37 games. At least they sometimes we're winning basketball games. Like, we got to a point of like 17 wins where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here watching 82 games of this. But now we're at a happy place. Things are good. So, you know, on the up and up. This is a good one. Who do you guys go for in the playoffs now? This one is from at LBJ all the way 23. So, Mike, I'll toss that one up to you. Who are you going for in the playoffs now?
Yeah, this, I was like actually asking myself this question.
It's the Mavs. Stop it. It's the Mavs. You're still rooting for the Mavs.
One, like, if they eliminate the Clippers, yes, but like to win it all, which I'm assuming is the question, that's tough, man.
You don't want to see Luka win?
Nah, I don't want to see Porzingis win a title. I would throw up.
No.
I can't do that. Sorry.
That's fair. I was trying to bait you into it, but it's okay.
Let's go, Suns.
I think there's outside of Carmelo Anthony, there's only one Bori in NBA, Devin Booker, who has a little Puerto Rican in him. So I'm going to go with Phoenix.
Like, Chris Paul deserves a ring, bro. I need it. So they've got 3-2 lead on Lakers right now. I don't know if AD is coming back or not. I already said whoever wins that Lakers-Suns series is going to go to the Western Conference Finals. Chris Paul looks healthy again.
Yep.
So definitely rooting for Chris Paul.
Yeah, for me, it's either the Suns or the Blazers. You know, just Blazers because Melo, and I love Dame. But, like, you know, also if the Blazers lose, and, you know, there's possibility of things happening with Dame. But, you know, I like the Blazers. I like that team. I love Melo. Give me the Blazers. Give me the Suns.
Definitely the Blazers, but I think, like, in terms of who I know is like that I'm rooting for, that's probably going to really have a real run. So you guys know in TKW Slack that I have been famously wishy-washy on the Bucks. I go in and out with the Bucks. It's like every 10 months I like talk myself into it. Then I'm like, never mind. These guys are frauds. I'm not going to do this again with them. Then there's a game or a series that I watch. And then I talk myself back into the Bucks, and that's where I've arrived again. So yes, the Blazers for all the Carmelo and Dame reasons, as everybody who follows me knows, but I am kind of here for the Giannis and Bucks revenge tour, man. They could have avoided the Heat. They chose to not only get the Heat, but to smack the shit out of the Heat immediately, swiftly, called them food in Miami on their home court. Giannis hates James Harden. Like, they got Drew to line up, like, perfectly with their three stars defensively line up perfectly with Brooklyn's. Like, I have now talked myself back into the Milwaukee revenge tour. I think that is who I'm going for. I think I want to see Giannis breakthrough. I do. Like, this isn't even like an anti-Nets thing, because I'm notoriously neutral on the Nets. I've been perfectly in the middle. I just enjoy watching them play basketball. It's a good basketball. You can't not with those three. It's just high level shit. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. I just don't care either direction. But the Bucks, seeing Giannis finally break through. All these fraudulent jokes. He has no skills, no moves. If he finally breaks through, just dominating, it'd be lovely. You know, Sixers looking suspect, you know. And Embiid just went down with the meniscus thing. He's day-to-day. He's made of glass. AD, he's hurt. Lakers might not make it. Like, things could happen.
I like that pick. I like that pick a lot. And don't forget, Giannis is like the first guy I've seen like that has really bullied KD. So that's going to be a really fun series.
It's a matchup nightmare, man.
As Flew Holiday, I would love to see Drew get a ring.
That's a phenomenal.
He plays wooden basketball. I like Drew. He fills in all the gaps. You need him to shoot some threes? All right, I'll shoot some threes. You need me to take it to the hoop? I'll take it to the hoop. You need me to pass a little bit today? I'll pass a little bit more. You need me to get five steals all in the passing lanes? I'll do that too. You need me to put the clamps on this guy? I could do that. He does everything. But what else could – that's like the dude that you want to go to war with. That guy, whatever you need, any given game, he can step up and do something. I love Drew. He's fantastic. Steven Chalada here said, don't be sad, everyone. That was the last time we'll have to see Elfrid Payton in the Knicks jersey.
Bring out the horns. Bring out the horns.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, right? I think if we have made it to the playoffs as a fourth seed and then Elfrid Payton doesn't come back next year, things went right for us, you know? Things finally went right for us.
Sweet victory in my ears, man. I'll take it. I don't want to ever see that man wear a Knicks jersey. I'm not even sure he's going to be in the NBA next year, to be honest. I don't know that any team wants him at this point. You know, Aaron had the most incredible tweet of the whole NBA season when he dropped that somebody dropped that Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell highlights video, and he said J. Cole and Elfrid Payton in the Africa League next year. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. I don't know if Elfrid Payton's going to be in the league next year, man. I'm so happy he won't be a Knick. I mean, we're hoping, yeah, but you know.
Yeah, so Elfrid Payton's not going to be a Knick anymore, man. That
every time I think about it, I just think about that Shaq clip where he's talking about the Wong Dong Tigers or whatever, and then he just gets up, starts screaming, Ni Hao. Like, that's all I keep thinking about, Elfrid. Just go to Shanghai, man. I'm done after this season. Like, it wasn't even personal. It was just, I can't believe that was allowed to have gone on as long as it did. To this day, we've talked about it too much on this podcast. And to this day, I can't believe it. But he's right. It's a happy note. This should be the last time we ever see number six suit up. We have some bad luck with number sixes since Tyson. We got to get whoever wears number six next. Just like anything, something, anything, just... You got to wash the stench off of this number. We can't get rid of it. It's become a cursed number. I really dislike it. So,
you should just retire the number for Tyson Chandler, and then it's gone forever. Yeah.
Or Landry Fields. But
true.
But yeah, so on that note, guys, I want to just probably cap it here. And thanks, everybody, for listening all these years. Thanks for following all this time. It's nice to actually give you playoff coverage of different things. You know, big shouts to everybody at the Knicks Wall. We have an incredible team that I think, you know, a lot of you guys take our content in different ways. And we got a team of like 30 something people there, and we do everything from the articles to the videos to, you know, the website support to, you know, YouTube to just everything these days. And there's a lot of people that try to make that happen. So, you know, too many to name at this point. Obviously, you know, me, the guys on the pod, Reed Goldsmith, you know, but it's a lot. So shout out to everybody at the Knicks Bowl. You know, just trying to bring you guys the best Knicks coverage we can. And again, just really happy we got to do the playoffs one time so far. And hopefully we'll be doing this every single year for a bit now. But just happy you guys are following, happy you guys are enjoying everything. And we just got a lot more in store for you guys, kind of building off that. So, you know, stay tuned. Definitely got a lot of things planned, a lot of things we want to do. We'll see how much we can get to in a short period of time, but really, really, really excited for what we've got going on next year. But, you know, make sure you're checking out the knicksball.com every day. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast, giving it a 5-star rating and review. Go to designtree.com. / the Knicks Wall, where we still have everything 20% off. I'm going to leave the playoff sale running probably probably through next week, because, you know, why not? Season's got to end. We got some merch to get out of here, you know, end of season sale. We'll just keep it going. So just use code TKW20, you get 20% off, and we'll just keep that rocking. But shout out again to everybody who bought merchandise, especially this last time. I've seen an inordinate amount of tips, tees all over the timeline. Lots of you bought them. So, you know, really appreciate that. Really appreciate all the support. But yeah, on that note, we're going to have more pods coming up. We're going to start getting to our off-season coverage, which usually is our bread and butter. Thankful to have started that in June for once. That feels nice. So we're going to have our articles coming out. We're going to have the draft season pods coming back soon. A couple of our latest TKW editions are draft stalwarts. So our video and film is going to be really top-notch this off-season. So again, excited for that. And the last teaser for you guys, if you check the Knicks Wall Twitter, you would have seen a retweet from one Ryan Gray saying, I guess it's time to work on the off-season app. So if you've been looking for the off-season app, you've been thinking about it, I know most of you have, because that's what everybody's asking about, then just buckle up. We got you covered. I don't know when. It'll be random, as it always is. We never give you guys a heads up, but when it's ready, it'll be ready, and we will drop it. So stay tuned. Again, it'll be a fun summer. So on that note, we're going to get out of here, but we will talk to you guys soon. Take it easy. Thank you for a very, very fun season.
Peace.